Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday mornings at 1 a.m. streaming live at richarddugan.com. We have podcasts at the radio shows page and also SoundCloud and iTunes. We are currently on Facebook and Twitter, for what that's worth to you. And we encourage you also go to our guests' website. We'll be giving you that web address here shortly. And we certainly hope that you will avail yourself, as we tell you every week, every program, we ask you to go to our guests' website. Please investigate what they're offering and the philosophy that they are coming from, the perspective that they have, and so forth. You've heard the phrase time and time and time again, ad nauseum, some might say, in regards to, and I remember hearing this back when I was even a kid growing up, peace on earth. And we just want world peace. That's what the Miss America pageant winners or contestants will say. So what is the one thing that you want? Oh, I just want peace on earth. Well, you've also heard the phrase, I believe it was from Gandhi, be the peace that you want. So it has to start with each one of us, and it has to start inside. And we're going to talk about that from that context, or from a lot of different perspectives, if you will. Our very special guest here on the program, I'm very excited to introduce to you Dr. Dravon James. And we're going to be talking a lot about, I'm going to say, Doctor, a new pharmaceutical that isn't really a pharmaceutical for world peace. And all we have to do is inoculate everyone or get everybody to, I'm not going to use that phrase, to take the pill or the injection, what have you, so that we all can just live a peaceful life, just go through life. And of course, there are real medications that can do that for us. But then we're not really living our lives. Thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you so much for having me. You're absolutely right. You know, when you take those medications for it, you're not really where you think you are.
Yes, but I'm so happy. It's I feel so good, and it's so wonderful.
And that temporary bliss, right?
And I got to tell you, I am sort of intentionally making light of it, because we do tend to take things way too seriously most of the time. And we're trying the best we can to find a way to get through our day, you know, not just our week, our month, and year. But sometimes just going from day to day can just be a struggle. And I was sharing, we've done a number of programs here on the subject of grief. And it struck me in the middle of the interview as we were talking that I was in the stage of grief. I hadn't lost a loved one. I hadn't lost a pet. I hadn't lost a job. I hadn't lost my home or car or spouse who, you know, hadn't left me and so on and so forth. What I had lost was the peace that I felt when I first moved to the Central Coast of California. And I lost that peace due to all of the wildfires that have happened over the last 11 years I've lived here, not to mention what's going on this year. Right now, as you and I are speaking, there are somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 15, maybe more, fires raging across the state of California. And at one point near the end of July, there were 90 wildfires across the United States, primarily in the West. And I will tell you, I have no peace living here anymore. If someone were listening and they had a place for me to move to up in Oregon or Washington or, please, Ireland, I would go in a heartbeat. Now, I also know, too, and I'm sure that you would understand this. It doesn't matter where you live. You have to deal with stuff. I lived in Phoenix, Arizona. As a kid growing up, I was there 46 years. Didn't have wildfires. We had the heat.
Right.
So I found that I was grieving over that. So it's like, all right, so how in the world do I, how do I recenter myself, doctor? I have this pain. I have this pain right here. How do I get rid of it? Let's start with this aspect of peace, because it is an internal thing. We do have to be the peace that we want to see in the world. And was I correct? Was it Gandhi?
Yeah, it was Gandhi.
Yeah,
he says,
okay.
Be the peace that you want to see. In everything that you just said, you just described the human condition, because I tell people, no matter where we go, there we are. Right.
Uh-huh.
So whether you're in California, you're in Phoenix, New York City, you're still there, and life is still happening. It's shaping itself differently, but the conflict is always, it's there. It's looming. It's going to happen. If we're not in conflict now, wait a few minutes. It's coming, right? And so we have to figure out if we have a desire to feel this, you know, I call it like this zen-like, but, you know, there's no absolute happiness anywhere, but be able to utilize everything that comes in our, to our life as a stepping stone to creating where whatever it is. First of all, I got to tell you that when I talk about peace, my definition that I'm using is nothing missing, nothing broken, wholeness, completeness, totality. Peace, meaning that you, I, right now, where we are enough. There's no more that we need to get, do, or be. We are enough. That right there, for me, when I hear that, you know, we're always striving to be more, do more, and, you know, just be greater than what we currently are, creates this continuum of discontent within ourselves. Right? Because we need to be more. It's okay to want to improve, but we need to accept that right now we are whole and we are complete, even if there are forest fires. And, you know, and the tragedy of that, something most often is beyond our control.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we have these horrible things happening and still be whole, complete, nothing missing, nothing broken, and a state of totality? Is that even possible? My answer is absolutely yes, it is. We've got to get ahead of knowing how to utilize everything that shows up, the good, the bad, and the ugly, as a stepping stone.
Mm. You know, I find it fascinating as we do these programs. I find it so interesting that one of the things that I sort of flippantly comment about in terms of the 1960s is when kids would get out of high school and the parents, of course, want them to go on to college. And I don't want to go to college. I want to go travel to this place, that place, the other place, and find myself.
Mm.
When the reality has always been, and what's interesting is I'm sure that they probably discovered this when they went, let's say a lot of folks, of course, you know, went to India to study with different gurus, right?
Right.
That hopefully those gurus were telling them, you didn't have to come to India to find yourself. It's with you right there where you are. And it's like you said
right
earlier, wherever you are is where you are.
Right.
Also, there was another frustrating phrase I heard in a personal growth program in relation to that. If you didn't want to be where you are right now, you would be somewhere else. So obviously you want to be where you are because that's where you are.
That is, it sounds so simple, but it's so profound.
And frustrating.
And frightening, right? Because you realize that your external conditioning, wherever you are, is an outpicturing of your internal situation.
Mm-hmm.
So wherever you are is really where you want to be. And until you change your mind and say, you know what? Yeah, enough of that. You know, and that's when we make a move. And without any blame, too, I think we get so, and how we get stuck is we get so ashamed of, I could be the blame for my current situation. And that's such a harsh way to look at ourselves, instead of just saying, you know what, I can now make a different decision. I was making this decision. You know, either the information that I'm receiving is different, or the way I feel about the information or what have you has changed, and I'm okay with that. Everything in life is changing. It has to. And so I've changed my perspective or what have you, and now I'm going to change how I feel internally, what I want internally, and my external environment has no choice but to change with me.
And so what we want to do is we want to talk about how we do that. Where do we start? Where do we begin to find this equilibrium, if you will, in this not only extremely dualistic world, but also, especially in this country, but it is actually all around the world, this very polarized situation that we find ourselves here in the second decade of the 21st century. You almost can't talk to someone about certain things, because if you do, you might wind up in the next world. That's how polarized things are. People are that agitated, that upset, that angry, if you will. And it's like, why are, you know, I got sucked in myself for about 6 months. It took me that long to get out of that. Although yeah. I'm still working through some of those things, and I'm, you know, and it's sometimes the words get stuck in my mouth because I don't really want to say them, but I have to throw out, I forgive you. I forgive you, who supposedly the person I'm blaming. I forgive right. you for the part you've played in my agitation. And then I must come back and say, and I forgive me for becoming agitated, for allowing myself to go down that dark road.
Well, you know what, Richard? Everything that you're saying is so, we're so busy in life that we don't take time to develop the one true relationship that will be with us from beginning to the end of our existence on this earth, and that's with ourselves. Life takes so much energy, time. It is so demanding, just literally making it from day to day, from hour to hour. It requires us to do so much, to be involved in so much, to stay ahead of so much, till we, the first step in creating a relationship with ourselves is honest and truthful communication with ourselves first. Mm-hmm. And we don't do that because we're so busy. And you're right. There's so much going on in the world. We're polar opposites with this person, with that person, with this agenda and that agenda. Till we, the self that we are, gets lost in that.
Mm-hmm.
And we honestly have to start there with really developing a clear, honest relationship with ourselves. And it sounds simple, it almost sounds laughable, but many of us don't know ourselves beyond what we align ourselves with.
Mm.
You know, this party, this gender, this ethnicity, this income bracket, this height, whatever. This car, you know, the owner of this car, living in this neighborhood. Very, very superficial things that really mean nothing in the scheme of who we really are. Those are just choices that we make
mm-hmm.
that probably may come from who we are at the core, or they could just be who somebody else said we were. We just said, yeah, that's good enough. You've done the research on me. You know me. Why should I bother? I'll just follow what you say. So we got to start there. We got to start with really getting to know ourselves. And I tell people I started on this journey when I was 17 years old. I was getting ready to go to college, and my brother gave me a book by Norman Vincent Peale. What was that? The Power of Positive Thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And that launched the whole, you know, inner self journey for me. And currently today, I still practice, and I don't know if it came out of that book or a thousand other books after that, but asking myself a question on a daily basis, and I encourage people to do this when you really want to get to know yourself and you think that you do, but when you start doing the work, you realize, yeah, need to get to know me a little bit better. What am I feeling right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And asking yourself that question, and if you can, if you journal what it is that you're feeling, and don't let yourself, oh, I'm hot, I'm cold, I'm angry. Dig a little deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Find out where that's coming from. And something so funny for me that I walk into my house and the kitchen is dirty, and I realized that it was a trigger for me. Like, why is that bothering me so much? It's, you know, the dining room could be dirty. That doesn't bother me so much. The living room could be dirty. But the kitchen said to me, on some deep level, I don't know where this came from, really, but that I wasn't valued. I no one in here in this space values me or has love for me. And I had to really think, like, where is this coming from? But ask, I went years. My oldest child is 18. I went years, and I just would be just so angry. I walk into the kitchen. But once I started knowing myself and start asking myself, what are you feeling right now? Mm-hmm. And not rushing myself to an answer. And say, what are you really feeling right now? Well, I feel angry because the kitchen's not clean. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's symptomatic of something else. Why do you feel so angry about the kitchen being dirty?
Mm.
And it came all the way down to value. I feel fearful that the people that I live with, because it really is fear in there somewhere, fearful that people that I live with don't value me. If you don't value me, then perhaps you don't love me. And perhaps I'm all alone, again, in the midst of company.
But isn't
you see, this... Go ahead.
I was going to say, isn't there a danger, though, in putting that on other people, that unless they love me, I can't love me, I won't be happy, I won't be at peace?
Richard, you're right. There it is right there, because it comes down to me saying that someone else is responsible for my happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as someone else is responsible for my happiness, it takes all the pressure off of me of having to ever develop a relationship with myself. Mm-hmm. It sounds really simple. It's just the kitchen, but it's much deeper than that. It takes all the responsibility off of me, but then it becomes unattainable.
Yeah.
Happiness becomes unattainable because it's out of my hands now.
Yeah. First of all, you must have had this kid when you were in your teens, because you're a young-looking woman. And by the way, I was going to say, you have an incredible smile. Awesome,
oh, you're very kind.
Awesome smile that just jumps off the webpage, if you will. And it seems to me that this whole process, and correct me if I'm wrong, doctor, but it sounds to me like you've mastered it.
Well, mastery is a strong word, and I'll tell you this, and I'm a practicing pharmacist. I've been a practicing pharmacist for 28 years, and I tell people, I meet neurosurgeons, and they're still practicing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like we're always practicing because it's dynamic. What we do is dynamic,
right.
And we're always changing. The earth is changing. Everything is changing, and so we get to a place where we're okay with change, and maybe we've mastered being okay with change, knowing that we can't stop it.
Right.
And spending time every day and say, you know what, last year that didn't bother me so much. So what's going on with me?
Yeah.
Where am I today?
Yeah. There's a great line from a comedian says, I don't like going to doctors because they're all practicing. And when they get it right, I'll start going to doctors.
But, absolutely. It's all just a practice. And
yeah.
That goes to that point you made earlier about how we take life so seriously. Not that we shouldn't take our health seriously. We
sure,
should.
Absolutely.
But we take everything so seriously, even our own self. We're so hard on ourselves,
yeah.
Whether we admit it or not. And you see people who are very, very hard and dogmatic with others. And it just kind of breaks your heart because you feel like that's how they feel about themselves. The way they're treating you, they feel 1,000 times worse about themselves in some area.
Yeah. You know, I was, of course, born and raised in the Catholic philosophy, a Western rite of the Catholic Church. My parents raised me that way, and I began early on to kind of branch out into other areas, searching for and just curious about and so forth. I mean, one Sunday morning, our neighbors right next door, family of nine, and they were members of LDS, the Mormon Church. And they invited me to go to service, right? So I went. And it was interesting. You know, it was long, just like Catholic Mass is. I come home, and my mom apparently did not know where I was. And I told her where I had been. And she said, okay, now you have to go to Mass. Because that didn't count. So, you know, it's one of those lessons that I learned. Okay, you got to take care of the stuff over here before you can go over there and play. But one of the things that I've found over the years is I love some of the passages that I've come across, biblical passages. One in particular, because this, I think, ties in. When we're trying to find peace, you know, as you say, we're inundated, not with just information, but situations, different events in our lives. And I remember, and I worked for 15 years for a Christian radio station, which was great education that I was paid for because I was an employee of the station. And I remember one passage in particular. It said, resist not evil. And what that said to me said, don't resist evil. That doesn't mean that you give into it. What it said to me was, this was the analogy. Evil is a big wall. It's a giant wall. And we're always trying to push it away, right? Or get around it or go over it or under it, right? But I thought, wouldn't it be easier if we just walked away from it? We turned our back on it and walked the other direction? And in a way, that's kind of what you're talking about in terms of this process of, yes, you're not exactly saying that, because you're actually saying we need to address why we're feeling what we're feeling. But it's not in a combative way, right? It's in a, we're trying to, if you will, educate ourselves and become more aware of who and what we are so that we can become who we want to be, right?
Absolutely. And I love that, resist not evil, because the thing that it takes so much energy resist something to, you know, you become an attractor pattern for the one thing that you're trying to resist. You've got all your energy there. And so that's what you're starting to attract, is more of the thing that you're trying to get rid of. But once you start noticing about yourself, communicating honestly with yourself, and that means that you don't blame yourself. It's a lot like this. I tell people, raising children is a great educator. At least it has been for me. Mm-hmm. When your kid comes home from school and they're in middle school, which is one of the roughest years to get a kid through, is middle school, mm-hmm. and they're totally upset about something, you don't sit there and start blaming them or blaming the teacher or blaming the other students. You sit there and you just listen. And you let it's okay. We got to acknowledge what happened today.
That's that interesting happened. That we do that with that. Yeah, we do that with our kids, right? And comes naturally, that we do that with our kids.
And we have to do that with ourselves and say, you know what? We're not going to rush to any. Something happened, and this is where you are right now. And let's just acknowledge it. We don't have to add anything extra. We're not going to throw any gasoline on it. We're just going to acknowledge that this is what happened. Mm-hmm. Acknowledge it, and then we're not going to blame you for what you feel.
Yeah.
Right? Because this is what happened, and this is what you feel. And let's just be there for a minute. Let's not rush. This is what happened, and this is what you feel. Once we get all of that, and we're okay, you're okay, they're okay, a situation has occurred. Now we can start unpacking it. But we skip that part a lot of times. We skip that essential part. And if you've ever raised middle schoolers, you know you can't get anywhere until you have that moment. You can rush past that moment. You're going to circle right back to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dinner's not going to be comfortable. Bedtime's not going to be comfortable. We're going to have to let you have that and just be there for a minute before we can start putting any of that sage old wisdom on it. We got to acknowledge, and we got to say it's okay to feel what you feel.
You know, it's interesting the way you put that, because I have a situation in my home life. I have a 16-and-a-half-year-old shepherd husky mix, beautiful white dog named Makushla. And she has to have help walking in and out of the house every day. She has to have this space that we've created for her in the house and then she wears diapers. And all of this. And every once in a while, I get very frustrated at the situation. And, you know, and it's not really her fault. She's not misbehaving, but, you know, it's like I'm trying to put the diaper on and the legs are going all over the place and so forth. And I get that frustration in me. And when I'm finished taking care of her, I go off to the side and I say, man, am I so glad I didn't have kids, because I would have been a terrible father. Now, my father was a great dad. He really was. Was he a disciplinarian? Both my parents were. And I'm mm-hmm. grateful for that, for the level of discipline they did give us. But, you know, it's like, I mean, we get frustrated at a lot of stuff, right? I get frustrated sometimes driving. I've gotten to the point now where I understand. Someone explained it to me that these people who you are now upset with, who cut in front of you or did this, that, or the other thing, did not wake up this morning and say, let's get Richard. Okay, it's not personal. which right. is, it's like, well, that's great, but not so much so, because it's not personal. They don't know me, and so they don't care enough about me to make it personal. You know, it's like you're totally oblivious of my existence, and that's why, wake, you know, that kind of stuff. But anyway, as you said, we have to get to that place where we stop blaming ourselves. Before we continue on, I want to let our listeners know that if they would like to get more information about you, about the work that you're doing, as well as a book we're going to talk about as well, they can go to drdravonjames.com. That's drdravonjames. And I don't know if you know this or not. I just was looking at the web address, drdravon.
I like it. I always tell people it's Dre in the word Avon.
Exactly. There you go. Avon, drdravonjames.com. And you can go there and you can find out more about her and about the work that she is doing, as well as the book that she has out now, and it is Freedom is Your Birthright. We're going to come back from our break, and we're going to talk more about that, because I'm just going to hold that. And we'll be back in just a couple of moments. Dr. Dravon James is my guest. You are listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I ask you to stay tuned, please.
Tell me your story.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. My special guest today is the author of Freedom is Your Birthright. Freedom is Your Birthright. And Dr. Dravon James is my guest. And I am just, again, I am really excited about having you on the program and all of my guests. It's one of those things that I love doing probably more than anything else. Look forward to doing this for, well, I have to outlive my great grandmother, and she lived to be 100, and I'm 58. So you do the math.
You got some time left.
I got some time.
That's good.
So
that's good.
And then just in the last 11 years, in the last year, we've been doing two or three interviews a week on the broadcast. Used to be just one that we would run three times. So again, 52 times three for this year, times 10 for the past 10 years, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just exciting. One of the things that I find also exciting is when we start to dissect this process and so forth. One of the things that I found so fascinating, this going back to, of course, my upbringing and, of course, being raised the way I was. And when I was married to my first wife, she was a member of what's called the Byzantine Rite of the Catholic Church, still under the Pope. A lot of people think it's Orthodox, you know. And I'm leading up to this title of your first chapter, The Truth Will Set You Free. You shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. And I remember scrutinizing, if you will, for a long time, the crucifix. And I remember the head of the church we attended in Phoenix was a Monsignor, and he would go around, and it was, I think, during Easter. I believe it was during Easter, and he would come to your house and bless it. He would bless your house, right? And he came over to bless our house. At the time, we were living in a trailer, and we had some time afterwards, and I asked him, I says, why is it, with all the research I've done, what I've found is when, in the days of Christ, and for at least 100 or 200 years after, the method of crucifixion, the final indignation, was they were stripped naked, hanging on the cross. I says, why? Why is it? I mean, isn't that correct? He said, well, that's true. I says, well, then why is it that the crucifix shows him with a loincloth? I don't understand. I mean, and I went to that passage. If ye shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Why are we ashamed of this? And he said that, well, and I was astounded that he was answering my question honestly. It's because, well, we don't want to upset the sensibilities of the people. And I find that There are all kinds of reasons why we don't tell the truth to one another. Oh, I'm Dr. Darvon, Dravon, I just want to protect you. I'm just trying to protect you from,
oh my God,
I don't know what. If in fact there really are aliens that are visiting the planet, the government isn't going to tell us because we can't handle the truth. No pun intended from the movie. If in fact there actually is weather control and all of the fires that are burning are because they've done this, that, or the other thing with the machine they're using because they're trying to destroy this part of the country because we're all liberals or progressives or whatever. Why? And then I think about business and so forth. And I hear about these different tactics for getting what you want. You ask for the moon, don't want the moon, but you ask for it, so that as you negotiate, you work your way down to what you really want. Why can't you come straight out and just tell the truth?
Oh, first let me just say congratulations on the success and all the growth that you had in your program in such a short period of time. That's awesome. But you're absolutely right. And of course, in the book, I'm talking about the truth of you will set you free.
Yes.
But it is this culture that we live in, and it's not just our generation, this goes back probably to the beginning of time, that we fear the truth because we honestly have so much internal fear of everything. You look in within relationships, people are afraid to be transparent because they have a fear of hurting your feelings, right? But hurting your feelings isn't surface. It sounds nice, and we want to be polite. Really, it is when you get hurt, how will that boomerang and hurt me? So you're hurt enough with my opinion of something that you decide to leave, or you take your business elsewhere, or you protest. And how now am I hurt by that? See, it all comes down to us having this deep seated fear that, and it's all ego based, that we will be left unwhole. We will be left in a non-peaceful state, that we will be not whole, we won't be complete. If someone were to know our true identity, our true motive, or the truth of what's going on with us, the rejection would leave us unwhole. And you see it across everything. You can go into homes, you see it there. You go into businesses, you see it there. You go into the world at large, and it's the same little piece of fabric that's being weaved all across the world to be fear-motivated. And that's what the ego does. The ego is like, I tell people, like a two-year-old. It wants to do good. It does. But at the core, it doesn't know how to do good because it is plagued by, I don't want to be wiped out. I don't want to be insignificant. So if you flip that, it's saying, I want to be whole. I want to be nothing missing, nothing broken. I want to be at peace. I don't know how to do that, which is fine because the ego has the maturity of a two-year-old. It knows that it wants to be, but it goes about it in a way that causes destruction.
Amazing. Tell me about how you came to understand or begin the process of doing all of this, of being interested in all of this.
Well, I was 17. I had graduated high school, and my brother, who was 13 months younger than me, we all love to read, but I love to read fiction and Shakespeare, and he loved to read autobiographies and, you know, things that just seemed completely boring to me. But one day he came to me, he goes, you got to read this book. And it was Norman Vincent Peale's The Power of Positive Thinking. And when I read it, something just clicked. It was everything that I believed. And it led me down this journey of self-discovery. And I come from an impoverished background. Many people do. And grew up, you know, my dad passed away when I was very, very young. So one mom, you know, mom raising three children and all of the economic problems that go along with that. And we just had problem after problem. And here I was, her oldest of three children, going off to college. And I must have read that book, The Power of Positive Thinking, 10 times that summer before I left for college. And I would like to say that all the problems stopped and my life was just easy sailing from then on, but it didn't. But I always would, I had this little book, and I would go back to it, and then when I had time, I'd go and get more books that talked about self-discovery, and I realized that as I was living my life, I'd started thinking backwards and saying, gosh, I can't remember a time in my life when there something wasn't up in an upheaval. Something wasn't drastically wrong. But yet, here I am, still here today. So, and this is really young. I was still in college. I may have been like 20 years old. And I said to myself, if this is the way it's going to be, if people are always going to have problems, when I finish this college degree, if I'm still going to have problems, and of course, you know, I want to think that I wasn't going to have them, but if I still am, I'm going to have to learn how to utilize those problems and utilize it to make something that I want. This is all that I have. This is what's showing up in my life. And that thought pattern has been like, you know, they say that phrase, is there a balm in Gilead? And it has been like the balm for me. It's been like, okay, here's the horrible thing that looks terribly horrible, and it is horrible. It feels horrible. But this is what you got. This is what you're going to have to work with. This is what showed up. It's like walking into your kitchen after working 10 or 12 hours, and you realize you didn't take anything out to defrost for dinner, and everything's still frozen, and you say, okay, I'm starving. I got to eat. What am I going to do? You go in the cupboards. You say, okay, well, there's some rice. You go in the refrigerator. You go, oh, there's some eggs. Oh, no, there's some bacon. That's not frozen. Is that some spinach? Maybe I'll make an omelet. You take whatever you have, and you figure out that this is what I have. And that's been my thought pattern, I guess, from age 17 when I got that book, is saying, you know, this is what it is. And even though I knew that's what I believed, I'm a person like every other person. I can remember being a pharmacist. I moved to Baltimore, and I had a job that required me to drive like an hour and a half to get there in the morning. So I'd leave at like 4:45 in the morning, and my prayer in the car every morning was, God, please don't let me need any more tragedy to learn any of these lessons that you want to teach me. I don't want to make any mistakes today. I just want to know. I want to do right. And, of course, you know, that prayer wasn't answered. I made 1,000 mistakes. I had 1,000 more tragedies. But I grew like everything else grows. I utilized that stuff and said, you know, I'm not going to be a victim of this. I'm going to utilize this. I'm not going to let this pain and heartache use me. I'm going to use it. It showed up in my life for a reason. This is what I have. I'm going to have to make something good happen with this. And we all have that power. When I talk to people, I'm like, okay, this is where you are. What can you do with this today? You can do something with it once we get past the blame. You see, blame makes us victims. And victim equals powerless. And, of course, no one is powerless except if we accept that role. We have to say, okay, I accept this and let it strip me of my power. Because rain falls on the just and the unjust.
Mm-hmm.
It just does. You know, you see somebody who's, you know, a billionaire, and you wonder, you know, what are their problems? But they have rain in their life. And you see someone who's living in poverty, and you say, oh my gosh, how can they be so happy? Well, there's rain, obviously, in their life, more apparent because we can see it properly, but they found something there to hold on to and say, you know what, I'm going to build with this. And that's kind of how my story, that's where my story is today. I, you know, rain still falls.
Yeah. You also have, and the title of your book is interesting because it's raised some interesting observations on my part. Freedom is your birthright. And so I would like to have you explain that, especially in the context that, in spite of what our Declaration of Independence says, that we have these inalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and happiness. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. You can't have happiness, but you can pursue it. Okay? You don't have to pursue life, and you don't have to pursue liberty, which people equate with freedom as well. But you're going to have to pursue happiness because it's not going to be given to you. Freedom is not free. And in the context of self, in the context of being at peace every day, what is, if this is the right term to use, the right word, what is the cost? What is the price of freedom in the context of our conversation here?
Right. So, you know, every time we say yes to something, we must say no to something else. And it is the saying of the no that people are not comfortable with. The first thing you have to say no, you have to relinquish your right to be a victim. You have to relinquish your right to be a victim. You can say, yes, this has happened, or this is happening. And I have a right to waddle in that. I have a right to keep telling you and everybody else that story over and over again, thereby making sure that the world sees you or myself or anyone else as a victim. That is your right. But you also have another right. I also have another right, which is to, one, yes, acknowledge that it happened, two, acknowledge how I feel about it, and three, say, and this is how powerful I am. This is what I'm going to do with this situation. It changes the game. Freedom is your birthright. You have the right to tell yourself to whatever it is that you need to tell yourself about the current situation so that you don't get stuck there. Doesn't mean you lie and say it's not happening, because that creates a whole nother bag of problems. You know, that suppression, you know how that goes, that constant positive thinking in the negative way. Oh, I don't feel pain. Well, yeah, your head's bleeding. You got to feel something there, right? We have to be honest that it's happening, but we have the freedom to say how that's going to translate in our life. What's that going to look like for me? What am I going to do with that? And that's why I sort of think the founding fathers were really, really onto something when they said the pursuit of happiness, because you will have to pursue it, because it goes against what we feel on an egotistical basis for us to say, I will now use this disappointing situation, like Houdini, to create this. Watch and see. Most of us are inclined to say, for years, do you remember what happened to me? And why? This is the reason why I am the way that I am, because these people did me this way. Or like you said, you don't even know me. You know, you cut me off and I'm not even significant enough for you to consider me. And that's why I feel the way that I feel today. It may be the reason why I feel that way, but I am free to say that I acknowledge that and I'm going to change what I do with that feeling.
Yeah. Another one that I find interesting, is still related to freedom, has to do with, and this goes to the core of what we talk about on a regular basis on this program, freedom to do what? Now I'm free. You know, I was enslaved by these emotions, these situations, this, that, the other thing. I'm not anymore. Okay, so now I'm out here in the middle of nowhere. What do I do?
Now, once you get from underneath that rock, now you are free to create. And here's where freedom is not free, really. It's because now you have the knowledge that, you know, today will be what I make it to be. I am the driver of today. I am the earthly decider of what today is going to be. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know who's going to cut me off or curse me out, or I don't know what, but I know that ultimately I drive today. I am free to create this day as the best day of my life, just mediocre, because some of us spend our life in mediocre, or the worst day of my life. I'm free, and that is so free. You can create there. You are a creator, an earthly creator of your life, 1 hour at a time, 1 minute at a time. You are creating a masterpiece, and you take ownership of it. The political parties aren't creating it. the financial institutions aren't creating it, the doctors and their lab reports are not creating it, you are. You say, you know what, that's happening, but now that I'm free, this is what I'm going to do with that. This is how I'm going to use that. Everything shows up in your life, and you say it's a tool. Everything is a tool. When I was growing up, my mom used to say, oh, you know, when we have a bad situation, she goes, oh, this is just a test. And I, you know, was not a lover of tests. Still am not a lover of tests. And it would make me just cringe, and I'd find myself getting really resistant. Another test of my loyalty. And it really isn't that, at least not the way that I see it. It's not a test. It's a tool. So we can utilize it and say, okay, I'm free. I've made the decision. I see it clearly as a tool. Now, would I have chosen this tool of unemployment? Absolutely not. I don't get a choice of the tools often. But it is a tool. What am I going to do? You read these stories, people say, you know, I lost my job, and that's how I built this multi-million dollar business. You know, my health got challenged, and that's why I got in this crusade, and I've written a book. You know, what are you going to do with the tools that show up? You're free to do that now because you've removed that cloak of victimism. You know, I'm a victim. I'm a victim of this. I'm a victim of circumstance. I'm a victim of that. No, I'm not. I see myself clearly. I see this is a tool, and I see that I have a choice, and I'm choosing life over death in every situation.
That's another thing, too, that I remember growing up with in the 20s. 20s. I'm not that old. In the 80s, the philosophy at that time in psychology and in encounter groups and so forth was that it's mom and dad's fault that I am the way that I am. I'm blaming them. It's on them, not me, because they did this to me. They did this, that, the other thing. In the 90s, we began to understand, but we also were dealing with the issues of codependency. And as we shifted through the 90s into the 21st century, we did begin the process more so of understanding our level of responsibility for our lives and where we are. And to use the analogy, you're either pregnant or you're not. You're not a little pregnant. So you can't be partially responsible for your life the way that it is. It was one of the frustrations I found sometimes when talking with people within the church and the programmers was the fact that, you know, if things were going great, you know, this was God. And if they were going bad, it was the devil. And I'm going, well, where's your part in this? You know?
Right, exactly. And that leaves you powerless, mm-hmm. too. People feel safe there because they feel like, well, if it's not my fault, then I'm not responsible. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're not responsible, then you can't make it better. Yeah. That means you're always waiting for some external source to come along. And I tell people all the time, I said, here's the good news, which is also the bad news. The good news is, you have everything you need to save yourself. Now, here's the bad news. There's no one coming to save you.
Wait, what?
There's no one coming to save you.
You're not sending a boat or a helicopter or a cruise ship to get me off the roof of the flooding, this, that, the other?
Now, isn't that great? So you can stop waiting. You don't have to wait for your turn. You don't have to worry that the next guy or girl is going to get saved before you do. Because there is no external source coming to save you. You have all of the internal tools inside of yourself. There are people who are going to show you how to utilize those tools, how to make that better for you, but they're not coming to save you. No one's coming from outside. All that work is going to be inside, and you can start the saving process of you right now. And here's one step even better. When you start it for you, it helps your household start for themselves. It helps your community. And that goes on and on. It spreads one person at a time. Good news and bad news. Because who would love that? To think, oh, my gosh, there's a parachute coming down. You know, I don't know if you remember that show, Lost,
yes.
Years and years ago.
I love
that show.
Well, I loved it up to a point. And then I'm thinking, with all of the drama that was going on in second season, third season, so forth, I'm going, it's getting boring. This is crazy. These people, based upon the information we had at the time, these people didn't do anything wrong. They just crashed. And why is this happening to them? And so on and so forth. And Of course, then I'm thinking, oh, I know what's going to happen at the end of the season. JR's going to wake up realizing it was just a dream. And I'm going, ah. but this isn't a dream. We're dealing with this stuff, and it's real.
Right. But isn't that how our lives happen, too? You know, what did you even do to deserve this situation? And we could spend our lifetime asking, why me?
Mm-hmm.
Why me? Why? And what's that movie from the 70s, Uptown Saturday Night Live? And the guy says, why me? And the other guy says, well, why not you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Who else would you like it to be? So we could spend our lifetime. We're never really, really going to. I mean, we could have some ideas about it, but wouldn't a better use of our time be, how am I going to utilize this situation? Right? Because I'm over here and I want to get over there. How can I utilize this situation right here to do that? What's here? Let me unpack this. Because there's something in there.
Mm.
That situation, if we look at it this way, that situation, that circumstance showed up in your life for one purpose, to serve you, to bow down and serve you. But you've got to take the responsibility of standing up and say, I, powerful me, I'm going to do this with the situation.
Yeah. Taking control in that respect, because ultimately we are responsible. I have another, another wonderful analogy. I don't know if it's wonderful or not, but this is the analogy that I came up with, again, while I was working at this station, that there's this young man or woman walking through this beautiful meadow, and they have their hands out in front of them cupped, like they're holding a big bowl or something. But they're holding their will, their personal will, and they're just saying, I want to do God's will. I want to do God's will. I want to do God's will. And God is up there, moved to tears. And the individual tosses their will up in the air, hoping God will catch it. And he does. And again, he is just he's just incredulous. Like, wow, one of my creation wants to do my will. And he, while he's saying all these things, he's compressing the personal will of that individual down into the size of a baseball. And he rears back and he hurls it back at the individual, hits him square in the head like a Nolan Ryan fastball, and says, then do something with the life I gave you. You are not a puppet on a string being manipulated by forces you do not understand. And I have to wonder, Doctor, are these forces that we don't understand, or do we understand them? We're just unwilling to acknowledge their existence. And I'm not talking necessarily or specifically about the spiritual world, although we talk an awful lot about that here. But in terms of the forces all around us that seem to affect us and sometimes infect us, to take us out of that peaceful mode.
I think it's a bit of both. I think one of the things is that ignorance is bliss, right? So it works both ways for us. We can sometimes blame everything on the external forces and the energies, and that there is validity in the fact that what we focus on, we create more of in our life. We talked earlier about, you know, being resist not evil. And what we create a resistance to, we draw more into our life. So ignorance of that causes that. You know, we spend all of our time focusing on, you know, what's wrong with the world, or what, you know, or bringing it a little closer to home, you know, what's wrong with me? You know, what's wrong with me? And then you only pull out more stuff that's wrong with you. There's something, you know, we can all stand improvement. But there comes a point in everyone's life, if they're really serious about, as you say, doing God's will or doing something to improve their own state of affairs, thereby improving the state of affairs for their community and for the world at large, you're going to have to do something with the hand that has shown up in your life. And it's different for all of us.
Yeah.
It's different for all of us. Everyone has something that is challenging them. If they don't, they can't grow. We grow from those challenges. If they do not have them, and they do, but if they do not have, or if they are trying, this is what I just see so often. People tell me all the time, they're trying to find a way around the challenge, right? Whether that's through hiding themselves in relationships so they don't have to deal with it, whether it's drug use, alcohol use, addiction to sex, whatever it is, so that they don't have to deal with the challenge that's shown up in their life because it's too painful.
Our listeners have heard me say this on more than one occasion. There's got to be a better way to build character than having to go through these challenges.
Right. And there probably is. There probably is. But we could spend a lifetime looking for it because we still got the challenges. Yeah. We can't get in a situation where we're practicing avoidance.
Yeah. It's like
you're practicing avoidance. You're just not, you're not getting the full growth of it because the challenge is still there.
Yeah. It's like I want to avoid these wildfires, so I'm going to get a boat and I'm going to go out on the water because it's unlikely that the water is going to catch fire. Okay, I'm hoping.
right. And something else happens. You know, the boat. There's a leak in the boat.
There's a leak.
Now we got another situation, and this is just they say it's always something, and the truth of that is it is. Always something. Yeah. So what do we do with it? Knowing that, do we spend our entire life, and I'm not saying don't strive to make your situation better. I'm saying just the opposite. Use what's shown up to help you create that better. Yeah. Perhaps, if you're so bothered by a situation and it's gotten to you, that is your emotional state acting as a compass and saying, when this is occurring, I am trying to alert you that this situation is creating an imbalance, and we need to move from here to over here so that we can create balance in our life. Everything is not for everybody. We're all individuals. So we talk, just use an example of the forest fires. I know people who, my mom, one of them, she would never move to California because of earthquakes. Never, ever, 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 ever. She said, it creates such a fear in me that I could go out in the morning and the earth could split.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't, and that's the end of my home. Even if I survive, nothing that I love or care about survives. And she goes, the fact that the earth opens up, I can't do it. So for her, would you come back and criticize that? No, that is that's your emotional compass saying that's not for you. Right. Over here, I'm from Chicago and she loves Chicago. Over here is for you. Whereas somebody else would say, these brutal winters, I cannot survive this. I can't think when it's this cold. We have to acknowledge what it is that is inside of us because it's serving as a compass. Those emotions are for a reason. They're there for a reason. We are taught, don't make decisions on your emotions. And I would say, never make decisions on your emotions. But unpack them.
Mm-hmm.
Unpack them and realize, is this serving you to say, this is a fear base for me, and I don't need to be in this situation. I need to be over here where I can maneuver more. So is it serving you to move you from a situation? Because it could be.
Yeah.
It could be.
Less than a month after we had moved here, 2006, I saw this little plume, just tiny little puff of smoke, way off in the distance to the north of us. I freaked out because I didn't have any perspective. I didn't know how close or far away it was. I didn't know who to call. Because it's not threatening us. You don't dial 911, but who do you call? And I was like a chicken with his head cut off. Over the years, as I have gotten to know the people here, and I've connected with the various first responder organizations and companies and so forth and so on, I'm no longer afraid of the fires. When they flare up, unfortunately, I get angry. I get angry because here's another one. That kind of thing, right? It's like, are we not done with this yet? kind of thing. I know who to call. I know who to call. I've got the numbers. I know what websites to go to see what the progress is and see how things are going. Thankful for those people who were there and so on and so forth. And so I've shifted. I still get into my emotions. And now I know that this is what I need to do to prepare in case we are evacuated. And that did happen to us once last summer. As a matter of fact, last July, there was a fire very close to us. It wasn't the one that was the closest to us over the last 11 years, but it was close enough. They wanted us out. They wanted us out of the way. And I got that. Right. And we got out of the way. And thankfully, nothing was damaged. But it's just really interesting how after we got out of the way, and once we had secured our animals at the local shelter, and once we had secured lodging for us, at least for the first night. I mean, if we get through the first night, we'll be okay, you know, kind of thing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I began to feel actually sort of an excitement, but also a sense of peace. And I started looking at it as granted, it was work. I had to go to work. It was a working staycation. We would never be staying at these hotels, and we stayed at three different ones. Here in Santa Barbara, we'd never be staying at those if it were any other situation, because we couldn't afford to do it. And thankfully, mm-hmm. we had the insurance that covered and reimbursed and so forth and so on. And so I began to look at it that way, thinking, well, I could write some Yelp reviews for these hotels, you know, kind of thing. And it actually became, for me, not so much for my wife, but for me, it was somewhat enjoyable because it was different, because of the fact that we were safe. If we did lose everything, then we lost everything, and then we start from the first step all over again, and it will be okay. It, you know, we made it this far.
Richard, you said so much. Oh, God.
Go ahead.
You said so much. And the key thing is, first, you said you used that anger, and you talk in that anger, that emotion. You put it in action. You call. You know who to call. You do those things, and then you moved into gratitude. Well, here we are. Here we are in this hotel we'd never be in before, and here's what I'm going to do with it. And that is exactly what you are free to do. Or you could do the other thing. Mm-hmm. I'm sick of the fires. I can't take it. Immobilize, letting the fear cripple you. And so often in life, we do that with just about, so you can name it. You lose a job, or you lose a child. These are horrible things to happen. Just horrible. Wouldn't wish it on anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to, it's happened. The choice for it to, for the forest fire to happen or not to happen is beyond your control.
Right.
It has happened.
Mm-hmm.
Now we do have choices. Now we have choices, essential choices. And perhaps, just perhaps, and I can say this as a mom who has lost a child, and just perhaps, as painful as this is, it's painful. I would learn any lesson any other way but this way. I could spend the rest of my life asking why this way? Why this way? Or I can say, this has happened. I wouldn't have chosen it. Wouldn't have chosen it. Even this, I must look at this and utilize it as a stepping stone for creating.
Yeah.
Painful that it is, or I could stay there. And if I had, you know, stayed there, I wouldn't have ever had the two children that I do have now, because it's such a dark place to be. But I had to make the decision, you know. I wouldn't have chosen it. It's happened. I'm free to utilize it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to utilize it, or I'm going to have to let it utilize me for the rest of my life on this earth.
Mm. Yeah. You know, and that aspect of it is interesting, because obviously, as you know, you made the comment earlier about how these kinds of situations, they help to build character. They help to build, make us who we are. A lot of people, you know, who may be approaching the end of their lives and what have you, the question is, do you have any regrets? And to me, asking the question, do you have any regrets, is basically asking, are there any parts of your life that you'd like to get rid of? But you can't.
No.
It's almost a silly question, because if you did, you wouldn't be who you are today.
Yeah.
So the fires that I'm going through, the various things that flare up in the neighborhood or down the street or 100 miles or 1,000 miles away, however far they are, as you say, that's out of my control. So what am I going to do? And of course, my wife and I, you know, we have suitcases that are packed with clothes that we're ready to throw them in the car. And we have a plan as far as the dogs and the cats and the chickens are concerned. And you know what? if we lose all of our wonderful books of wisdom and spiritual teaching and metaphysics and so, you know, we lose them because we've already gleaned from them everything that we can. And now we're just kind of holding on to them for what reason, I don't know. It sounds kind of weird. And you made a very profound statement there in reference to choices, because that's what this program is about, giving people choices and knowledge of those choices to help make their dreams come true. But you're also talking about having choices that you can move forward. It's not just about making your dreams come true. It's also about directing your life. I'm sorry?
You're right, moving forward, getting the most out of today, because that's how you build a dream,
mm-hmm.
1 hour at a time.
Yeah.
What you do with this hour is so very important. What you do with this pain, so very important. And it's not just pain. People take great situations. You'll hear them. You remember when I was, you know, the best football player in college? You're 60 years old. You're no longer in college. That was a great thing to do. How did you use that to build a platform for yourself? Maybe you didn't go on to the NFL, but what did you do with that energy? You can't keep living the college dream. At some point, is what did you do with it? What did you do with that victory? How did you use that victory as a stepping stone to where you want it to be? How did you use that pain? Same question.
Mm-hmm.
How did you use that pain as a stepping stone? Everything, we've got to learn how to utilize it. You hear it all the time. People who have everything, you say, well, I don't understand. They have no problems. They have no problems, and yet they're so miserable. Mm-hmm. If I had 50% of what they had, I could build a wonderful life for myself. Only if you know how to use all that material stuff, because it's just stuff.
Yeah.
To build the life that you want beyond material things.
Yeah. And it's funny how it's so easy to get sort of drawn in to the material world and the material things. I mean, we work because we want to have a place to live, a roof over our heads. We want to wear clothes. We want to have food on the table. And transportation, whatever that may be, whether it's a car, or your public transportation, or a bicycle, or, you know, whatever it is. You know, we want to have those things. And then we start looking at other things. And I've even told people many, many times, I says, you know what? If I didn't live on the mountain above Santa Barbara where I need a car to get to and from the home, I've been talking to them about installing a zip line. Of course, getting back up here is another whole nother thing. But if I could live somewhere where I could get to and from my job and so forth, I'd get rid of the car. And they would say, well, what if you want to go on vacation? I said, well, I'd rent a car or an SUV,
right,
or an RV or what have you. I'd fly wherever I was going. I mean, you know, you don't need to rent anything if you're, say, flying somewhere else. Maybe you rent a car to get around after you get there. But, I mean, so what? Big deal. Because if I'm not spending the $150 or $250 or whatever the monthly car payment is, plus the insurance, hey, I could put that towards a rental of a vehicle for a month and take a month-long vacation driving the country, or renting an RV and you know, camping in different campsites up and down the coast, or whatever the case might be. Because it will open up a whole new set of opportunities. And that's really what you're talking about. Not just that kind of freedom, but again, going back to the beginning, that freedom from within, that freedom from the blocks, those emotions that we get stuck in. And that's really what you're promoting and talking about.
And exactly. Living free creates so much opportunity for yourself. So, and it's, you know, you may want $1 billion income. Nothing wrong with that. If you feel that you want more and need more, then you certainly do. You may want to drive the biggest and the fastest sports mm-hmm. car known to man, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just making sure that you've taken care of the inside so that the outside, we're not doing in the reverse. The outside's not driving the inside.
Mm.
Which is what so many of us do. You know, whatever the climate is for today, and that's who we are today, and we have, you know, no knowledge of self. And that's why so many of us are so miserable, and we just can't find happiness, and we get so wrapped up in things that are, who is the guy who wrote the book? He used that term, circle of influence, circle of concern. Right? And, you know, I have no influence over that. It's concerned, but I have no influence over that. And so it can't make me that miserable. It just can't. I don't have any power over, you know, what the Dow Jones is doing today. I can look at it and think, well, I'd like it to be doing better than that, but it's just money.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it could very well come back to you, you know?
Yes.
You know?
Yes. It can. And you can make it so much more personal. I work in the healthcare field and have been there for over, almost 3 decades. And, you know, you see people who have lab results and they're so torn up about the lab results. And you empathize with them. But you say, you know, you do what you can do.
Yeah.
You eat the diet that you know, that promotes the health that you want to have. And let go of the stress of believing that you have done anything, that you could have done anything other than what you did today. You did the best that you could on your diet. Go ahead and forgive yourself. You did the best that you could on your exercise or what have you, all these other things that give you power with your health. You do those things. And let go of the stress of blame. And watch how your health will start to improve.
Yeah. You're also the founder of Everyday Peace, and your goal is quite similar to ours, which is to educate, empower, and inspire others to build the life of their dreams, as we've just been talking about. First of all, tell me about Everyday Peace and how that got started.
Oh, it got started quite organically, which means by mistake. I was doing some... I was once a week a guest every week on a program called, oh gosh, the name just flew out of my head. It was a web, kind of a web-based program, and what they did was they had people come on once a week, and they'd talk about topics, and they'd have guests on, and it was more biblically-based, not religious, but biblically-based. They'd, you know, have a topic from the Bible.
Sure.
And I was a guest on there quite frequently. The name almost came to me. But anyway, so I was on there, and I was doing that, and I was talking. I really, really enjoyed it, and I started writing. You know, I'd write down what I was going to talk about for the week, and I thought everything that I'm talking about comes back to the one thing that the power that I believed is responsible for the internal life that I have today, despite all the external things that are happening. And I really... through talking with this group and sharing and having people contact me and ask me to come speak it for them, I said, I really, really am passionate about having people understand that don't get so hung up on what's happening externally till it immobilizes you. In fact, let it do just the opposite. Let it mobilize you, no matter what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where that came from. And, I was speaking for pharmacy all the time, speaking on drug topics, and I would start sharing just a little bit at the end of my lectures. I'd share about everyday peace and my concept of what peace was. And from there, I'd be talking to doctors and nurses and patients as well, and people were more interested in hearing that journey. They were like, oh, you know, tell us more about the peace journey. Tell us more about the peace journey.
Mm.
And I said, you know, I am going to do that. You know, and that's how it just came about. I said, you know, this is every day. You have to make a decision every day. We're not working towards having peace in 2019. You deserve peace right now, today. Today. You can have it today, despite the fact of what's going on and how, you know, the lab results haven't turned out just right, the kids aren't acting right, the marriage is failing, what have you. Or if it's blooming and you're getting ready to get married, whatever it is, you're going to have peace today. The external situations only help to drive home the fact that freedom is your birthright. You're entitled to peace right now.
Hmm.
You have to do the work, get the peace, claim it, but you have to do the work. You have to do the work. Don't be a victim of constant, whatever, you know, flapping back and forth in the wind. Whatever the climate is today, well, they said I should be happy. They rarely, whoever they is, rarely say that you should be happy. From the time you wake up in the morning, you hit that
alarm clock and it goes off, there's a traffic jam on 95. If you were looking to get somewhere in a rush, forget about it. You know, so from the time you get up, you get in the car, they tell you, you know, well, guess what's happening with the dollar today? You get to work, guess who we're laying off today? So no one really is saying to you, hey, guess what? Choose happiness. They say, no, choose fear. It's more profitable.
Oh, yeah, it is. Absolutely
is. You know, we can sell you products.
I will tell you that in the last political cycle, that was what was peddled, and that's what sold, was fear. You know,
because it resonates with us, because we all feel it. We all feel fear. So people, the cheapest way to get an alignment, you know, I tell my kids, this is middle school, I said, the cheapest way to get friends is to go in with negative jokes. Because people, that resonates with people. When you do something that's negative, or you talk about somebody else, or you're creating an environment of fear, people are like, oh, I recognize fear.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I said, that's cheap. Well, let's go for the expensive. Let's go and let's create a feeling of wholeness and safety. And then you create an alliance for life.
Yeah. I tell you, the hardest thing for me to listen to is someone who is, and this term just applies, who is just constantly self-deprecating.
Oh.
Just constantly putting themselves down, constantly. And I have to catch myself every once in a while. I feel very fortunate because throughout my life, I have felt as though I have been in the right place at the right time as far as my career and relationships and this and that and the other. It's not to say that it's been smooth sailing all the way, but, you know, I mean, think about it. In spite of or because of or regardless of the wildfires that seem to crop up every year where I live, I'm still living here. And then I'm living here. I mean, I've always wanted to live by the ocean. So, you know, I can hear exactly what you're saying. Break the rules. Find your freedom. Live your life. Freedom is your birthright. Dr. Dravon James is my guest. Dr. Dravon, I thank you so much for joining us here on the program. And first of all, I'll let our listeners know that your website is drdravonjames.com, where they can find out more about you, the work you're doing, as well as Everyday Peace. And we'll certainly link to your website as well as have the link to the interview. Encourage our listeners, too, to listen to the entire interview. The radio broadcast only gives you 50 minutes, but we went on and on and on. And we could have gone on much longer, but nonetheless. And if you should ever find yourself out here in the Santa Barbara area, Dr. Dravon, I would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation. This is, quite honestly, this is really important. I consider this program as my form of therapy. And our hour is about up.
Yes, it's been wonderful, and I would love to take you up on that in the near future. As with me, I consider this work as my therapy, and one person at a time, we get better and stronger.
Yeah, yeah. Before I let you go, three final questions. You may have answered these throughout the interview, but I'm going to ask them directly. And again, thank you so much for giving us so much time here on the program. The first question is, thank you. My first question to you is, who is Dravon James?
Dravon James is the creator of Everyday Peace. I am where my mission is to inspire and to educate and motivate people to utilize everything, the good, the bad, and the in-between, to create their dream life. I am an everyday peacemaker. And I believe that everyone else is too. Mm. I am the mom of two amazing teenagers, a wife of 23 years, an actress, and a practicing pharmacist for 28 years, loving every minute of my life.
And I think, appropriately so, I think you filled my prescription today. I think you filled it.
I hope so. good.
Next one.
All good stuff. No side effects.
I love that. I love one of the commercials for one of the drugs for a heart condition, and one of the side effects was the very heart condition that the drug was designed for.
So, you gotta love it, don't you?
Second question to you is, What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
What I want most to achieve is for people to realize that their destiny is not controlled by any external situation, and to know that that is a good thing, that they have the tools and the powers to create the life of their dreams, not someone else's dreams, their dreams right now. So that's what I want. I want to put that ownership back where it should be with the individual to drive their life in the direction that they wanted to drive it in, utilizing everything, everything, the good, bad, and the ugly.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
I know this now, and I believe I've always known it, but I accept it now. My life's purpose is to give hope and inspiration to people. That is my purpose, to give hope and inspiration and a roadmap, simplified roadmap.
And I think you've done that today in this program, as well as through the work that you are doing. Dr. Drevon James, thank you so much once again for joining us here on the program, and we do look forward to having you back again soon to share with us the continued work that you're doing.
I would love that, and thank you for having me, and you continue doing this awesome work that you're doing. It's so valuable.
Thank you. I'm Richard Dugan. We've been talking with Dr. Drevon James, the author of the book Freedom is Your Birthright. Also, go to drdrevonjames.com. We will be linked to her website, so we encourage you to go there as well. And I'm Richard Dugan. Until next time here on Tell Me Your Story, love, Talal.